Today on Seculo, Vice President Harris snubs U.S. top ally to attend a sorority event.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. This is the day Prime Minister Netanyahu will be addressing a joint session of Congress this afternoon after we are off the air. So we, of course, cover his remarks tomorrow on the broadcast. But what a lot of discussion is about the protests that are occurring on Capitol Hill and some statements made by the congressional left of the Democrat Party. For instance, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, she wrote on X that Netanyahu is a war criminal committing genocide against the Palestinian people. It is disgraceful that leaders from both parties, Republican and Democrat, that's the only way you have a joint session, is you have to be invited by both the leaders, the Republicans and Democrats, and of course it's the Senate Democrats who lead the U.S. Senate, that leaders from both parties have invited him to address Congress. He should be arrested and sent to the International Criminal Court. That's Rashida Tlaib. AOC, it is a dark day in U.S. history when authoritarian with warrant requests from the International Criminal Court is allowed to address a joint session of Congress. 40,000 Palestinians are dead. Put an asterisk there, folks. Put my own asterisk there. Hostages aren't home. Of course, that's true, but whose fault is that? Hamas. Netanyahu is a war criminal. Of course, he's accused of that by the ICC, but there's been no final judgment there. She forgets the fact that they have also brought up those Hamas leaders on the same kind of charges, as exactly the same charges as Netanyahu. And then she will, of course, be boycotting his address. I'm sure they're very excited about that in Israel, that she won't be there, as well as some of these other radicals. But I think, Will, we're at a time, after we saw what happened at President Trump's rally, when we know there are a lot of protesters on Capitol Hill who represent a lot of different groups who may be opposed to Prime Minister Netanyahu, from Israel group, from pro-Israel groups, who are saying he's not doing enough to get hostages out, to radical pro-Palestinian groups. And then after we saw what happened on Saturday, you can think something is very secure, you know, with the Secret Service head leaving and after all the pressure yesterday, finally stepping down from that position, which I think we all expected to see when there was that bipartisan call. But now the question is, can security step up and secure an event like this in Washington, D.C.? I think Washington is better situated to secure a high-level event like this, Will. But certainly, I mean, after we've seen the missteps by the Secret Service in just the last week, it's got to be concerning to lawmakers and even maybe President Netanyahu and his delegation.
That's right, Jordan. And as you're seeing, there's images we've shown on the screen of the thousands of people that have descended in front of the Capitol. It looks like they have a good perimeter, but they got inside the Cannon building yesterday in the rotunda there and had a demonstration. There were arrests made, and I've seen footage on social media of the protest in front of the Watergate Hotel, where Bibi Netanyahu is staying, of individuals wearing a keffiyeh, chanting, "We will kill you all," very anti-Semitic, hateful language.
Broke into the Watergate Hotel,
into the hotel and released maggots in a conference room that was reserved for some of the delegation, as we're showing on the screen there as well. Just vile, and also makes you question the security that is there at such a heightened time in American history.
Yes, folks, we'll take your calls, of course, at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We want you to support the work of the ACLJ. We are facing our greatest challenge yet in our defense of Israel. What Biden, Harris, and the radical left are doing to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is a disgrace. And if they won't defend Israel, we will. But we urgently need your support, and have your gift doubled today at ACLJ.org. We're preparing to file one of our most important amicus briefs ever at the International Criminal Court to defend Israel. The ICC just granted our motion, and our deadline to file is in just a few days. So support the work of our Life and Liberty Drive. Every donation is doubled. $10 becomes $20, $50 becomes $100, and so on. Go to ACLJ.org and have your tax-deductible donation to keep us in the fight. folks. Welcome back to Secchio. We will be taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So again, folks, I want to talk to Tulsi Gabbard right now. And again, Tulsi, who's a member of our Secchio team here, about, again, Vice President Harris putting together a coalition over the last couple of days, which for right now has made her certainly the leading candidate for the Democrat Party's nomination in August when they get together. We don't know yet if anyone else high profile will jump in that can really give her a run for the money. Certainly there's some names still out there. But I wanted to go right to you, Tulsi, because you've had experience with Vice President Harris on the debate stage before. And in fact, delivered quite a takedown that we're going to show in just a couple minutes of Vice President Harris when she was trying to push policies that she actually didn't implement when she was the Attorney General of California.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because that footage has been played quite a bit, especially recently. And I also heard Kamala Harris say the other day that once again, she is proud of her record as a prosecutor and pointing to how that will make her a stronger candidate against Donald Trump. What I think is necessary in this election to make sure that voters are very informed and can see past how they're going to twist Kamala Harris's record into whatever they feel will be most marketable. We have to stay focused on the facts, both the record that she had as the Attorney General of California, when she had the opportunity to bring about real criminal justice reform that helped people and kept our communities safe versus what she did, her record in Congress. As you know, probably more than most, how as a member of the Judiciary Committee, she defied the Constitution, essentially implementing a religious test when it came to a number of different judicial nominees that Trump brought forward, basically saying that they were not qualified because they were too religious or too Catholic or happened to be members of the Knights of Columbus. And then you look at the last 3.5 years as her record, with her record as vice president, whether it comes to border security, when it comes to the radical woke ideology of inflicting this trans agenda on our children, or when it comes to foreign policy. In every one of these examples, Kamala Harris has shown she is incapable and unqualified to be president, number one. And number two, her policies will continue to be a reflection of the Biden-Harris administration's policies that have made our country far worse off and less safe than they were before they took office.
Yeah, I want to play for people. This is goes back to the debate that you were in with Vice President Harris at a time when she was running for president. You were running for president, and she brought up, you know, her record, as she will again and has already through this her new campaign now running for president of the United States as a prosecutor. And you brought out the truths about what she did as a prosecutor in California. Folks, watch it and take a listen.
I want to bring the conversation back to the broken criminal justice system that is disproportionately negatively impacting Black and brown people all across this country today. Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence. Innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
Yeah, so I mean, a couple of those things, laughing about smoking marijuana while keeping, you know, 1,000+ arrests made for that in a state like California, where obviously the laws have changed significantly since then. But she didn't really have a comeback to a lot of those answers. And in a way, Tulsi, that was kind of the end. I mean, Kamala Harris was kind of over with before she started in that process, once people found out about that record, especially liberals found out about that record.
You know, I think what that really exposed in that whole exchange was her hypocrisy. You can talk about the specific issues that I raised. My point was that she was proud of these positions. And then yet when it came right down to it, her own rhetoric, Her own example was the exact opposite. She showed throughout that campaign how she said what she felt needed to be said one day in front of one group of people to get their votes, and said the exact opposite in front of another group of people the very next day because she felt that was what they wanted to hear. It shows a lack of groundedness in who she is and what her principles really are. It was revealing that even the New York Times, I believe, wrote a scathing editorial after she dropped out of that campaign about exactly this, how much of a chameleon that she was, not really knowing exactly even what her vision was for our country. She was driven purely by political ambition for more power, which is exactly what is driving her still today, and which is a very dangerous red flag because it shows yet again, like with President Biden and the unelected people behind the scenes who are making these decisions, who benefit from them being in power, they will say and do whatever they feel they need to retain or grow that power, even at the expense of our Constitution, our freedom, and our safety and security as a country.
You know, Tulsi, I wanted to ask you about this because obviously Kamala Harris could try to change the way the people see her. But instead of being at the Senate and in Congress today for this joint session speech by Prime Minister Netanyahu, and even being there, she could come out and be critical. It gives her the opportunity to speak on the issue. She's decided to keep her regular schedule. She's attending a sorority event, and it's a big sorority event. I think if you were vice president, maybe even president, and it fit into your calendar, certainly you could probably go to both of these. And I feel like she could probably do that now anyways. But instead of taking that path, she's running from Washington, D.C. with a major issue that's especially controversial in her party, not especially controversial inside the Republican Party, but certainly in her party, the issue of supporting Israel and to what extent. And instead, she's punting on it and running away to Indiana.
You know, people have been asking and it's been questioned, well, what kind of commander-in-chief will Kamala Harris be? What kind of president will she be? She's in a position right now where our sitting president has announced he is not running for re-election, has endorsed her to take his place. And the very first opportunity that she could have to go and demonstrate her leadership and what kind of president and commander-in-chief she would be by attending and sitting in what is a major, as you said, it is a major address to Congress by our longtime strongest ally in the Middle East, the Prime Minister of Israel, coming and speaking about an issue that is important to the American people and obviously important to Israel and to Palestine and everything that's unfolding across the Middle East. This is an issue that's extending beyond this decades-long conflict, generations-long conflict between Israel and Palestine. It's one that has to do with the threat of Islamist terrorists, of which Hamas is a central part of, along with many other groups around the world. It has to do with peace and security across the region of the Middle East. And yet Kamala Harris is choosing to go and attend a political sorority event rather than being there and showing, again, what kind of president, commander-in-chief she would be, which begins with showing up.
You know, what should people be, kind of final question to you, Tulsi, what should people be looking for as they hear more, and I think pay a lot more attention to Harris now that she is the leading candidate to receive the Democrat nomination, which also comes with the money that Joe Biden and their campaign had raised. What other issues? I mean, so we talked about kind of she talks about a prosecutorial record, but doesn't like talking about who she was actually prosecuting and putting behind bars. You explained that to the American people in that first debate, which I think was effectively killed a lot of her campaign. She said horrible things about Joe Biden, but ended up being his vice president. I think people are trying to figure out right now, who is Kamala Harris? You know, who is she? And what kind of president would she be? Is it in the same vein of Obama, or is it even more lefty and kind of out of touch with where mainstream America is?
You know, one thing, Jordan, that came to mind as she talks about being tough on crime, and no doubt they are going to try to push that in the hopes of winning over people who are rightly concerned about how under the Biden-Harris administration, so many of our communities and cities have become less safe, and the Democrat elite policies have tended to favor the well-being of violent criminals more than the interests and well-being of the victims of these crimes. When you go back, and this is what I hope people focus on here in the next few months of this election, look at her record. She was going after parents who were trying to homeschool their kids for the crime of truancy instead of supporting school choice. There are many issues we don't have time to get into here. My main thing is don't be distracted by the optics and the fact that they've changed the face of the figurehead of the Democrat elite. Their policies have been disastrous for our country and will continue to be so under a President Kamala Harris. We cannot afford that as a country, and she must be stopped.
As always, Tulsi, we appreciate you being part of our team and shedding light on that unique opportunity that you've been on the stage with her and calling her out for her record. I think you're right there, too. It's like, don't get confused by just the look change or the name change. Is that these are the same radical policies by the same people behind them. Support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ. You know, Christopher Wray is also on Capitol Hill, the FBI director. He has revealed that the Trump shooter in Pennsylvania used a drone and had a remote bomb detonator. They used the drone a couple hours before the event. Can you imagine that? A couple hours before an event with a former president, and you were flying your drone overhead, you would think the Secret Service would have noted that immediately, either taken that drone down, located where that drone took off from, and that person would be then monitored for the rest of the event. I mean, that would have been enough for me as a Secret Service agent, unless it was has just become normal to have drones flying over presidential events. I know that news agencies use them to some extent, but you think that they have to, they've got different credentials and they have different placements. This guy was just using his own drone to try and find the best shot. There's talk about accomplices, and they're talking about the bomb making, which they said were relatively crude devices, but they had the ability to be detonated remotely. So he didn't have to have, it wasn't like a suicide vest. It was something that he could actually detonate further away. So was he, at one point, you know, was he hoping to hit a button and maybe explode some of those IEDs that were found in his vehicle that he used to get there? So even, you know, but of course he would have had to have survived longer to do that. So there's a lot more. There's of course talk about, was there any accomplice? Did someone help him figure out that this spot would be the direct line of sight, that this would be the place to go, that got the ladder there on time, that made all of these things that led up to that horrible event work in a sense? I mean, people call him like a failed shooter and a missed shooter, but he hit the head of Donald Trump and he killed another person with, what, about 6-7 shots? The idea is that if President Trump had looked a different way or was looking a different way, he would certainly not have likely been our nominee this week at the Republican National Convention, and may not even, more likely, not even alive at this point. And when we heard that from President Trump at the RNC, I still think it was very powerful when he said that he got up on purpose to let the people know, really at the rally, because he could hear people saying, I think he's dead, I think he's dead, he's not moving, and his eyes are open, and they were, that he got up and made the Secret Service kind of pause so that he could make that fight statement. And then, of course, get his shoes back before being moved to that safer location and being taken out of the event. What was interesting is that we got a couple days where that wasn't as focused on because we had the shifting Joe Biden news. But now, Will, we know we're going to hear from Joe Biden tonight.
That's right.
In a primetime address, I guess from the White House again. And I would guess this is him explaining, unless he's about to announce something even bigger, it's either him explaining why he's remaining president and his endorsement of Harris, or if we're surprised, it could be that he is stepping down at some point.
That's
that he
right.
can't carry out these duties.
So from the presidential Twitter account, or X account, at POTUS, he tweeted that tomorrow evening at 8 p.m., so tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I will address the nation from the Oval Office on what lies ahead and how I will finish the job for the American people. Yesterday afternoon, there was imagery of him both boarding Air Force One, leaving Delaware, and then arriving back at the White House a little bit later. So we have seen the president now since his announcement on Sunday, and he will be speaking tonight to the American people. I'm curious if this is an Oval Office address. With it being primetime, it should be. Oh, that's right. He did say from the Oval Office. So when you get that kind of Oval Office address, you get a certain tone. The networks will all cover it. It will they'll go live to it, so it interrupts regular programming. And it will be interesting to see what he says. There has been a lot of speculation on whether he will finish the term. There's calls from many members of Congress that he should step aside. If he can't run for president, how can he continue to actively be the president? There were the reports from the New York Post that one of the angles that some of the Democrat leaders came at him with when trying to get him to step aside was, hey, if you don't do this, we may have to go the 25th Amendment route. Yeah. So there's a lot of questions that remain, and what this address previews tonight, I don't think it's the last we've heard of him on this issue either. I think that this will still be the definitive topic for President Biden as he finishes out what is an earlier than planned lame duck presidency.
Yeah.
And we look at this tonight. We'll see what he says and whether or not how much longer he does remain commander in chief.
We know the shooter Googled how far away Lee Harvey Oswald was from JFK before he fired. And Director Ray said that in a few moments ago. He talked about, again, now we've had members of Congress visit this building that was utilized by the shooter. And I think to call him a failed shooter is only in the sense that he did not end up killing Donald Trump, because he ended up hitting Donald Trump, and he did kill another rally goer, a firefighter, as we've talked about and honored during the Republican National Convention. But at the same time, we are learning more and more about this gunman. Why? The Secret Service knew they needed to be on the lookout for something like this, and yet still sent President Trump right on stage. And if they would have done maybe a quicker review of their surroundings, Will, including looking at what's going on inside and on top of some of these buildings that people were reporting an hour before, that we may not have been in a situation where President Trump ended up shot.
That's right. And as the Secret Service director resigned yesterday, there's now an acting Secret Service director, acting director Ronald L. Rowe, and he will be taking that role. It's curious to see if President Biden will nominate someone before the end of his term, or if he will just allow the acting director to play out. But it is also curious that the Secret Service yesterday, it became news that they have advised the Trump campaign against any more outdoor events. Yeah. So that's also concerning of the fact that, they had a failure, but now as they're doing their after action review, it seems like they aren't confident that they can secure an outdoor event in this way, especially in a heightened threat scenario, as it clearly is happening at this time. The Trump campaign is going to go along with the recommendations of the Secret Service. They're not planning any more outdoor events. They're looking at larger basketball arenas, things of that nature that they can utilize here to finish out this campaign. Now, as the reset button has almost been hit on the campaign, because the entire the opponent and the entire opposition to who you are running against is completely changed. President Trump himself said, we've wasted millions of dollars because the DNC propped up Joe Biden until now with the switcheroo.
Yeah, I mean, it's very bizarre. Like, we told you why they needed to make the switch they made, so that they could continue the hard dollar monies in that same account. Because if someone else gets in this race to try and raise the $250 or $300 million, I think now, that Biden and Harris had raised in hard dollars, would be just so difficult. It's one thing to go out and raise the 527 money. It's a whole other thing to go out and raise money that has a very low cap. I mean, $2,600-ish dollars per individual, double that for a couple. So again, when I think we look at this, we realize that Harris was really their only choice because of the situation they backed themselves in. And so far, Will, no one else has put their name out there significantly.
That's right. And the delegate pledges have seemed to, at least their pledge delegates, have gotten Kamala Harris over the number needed for the nomination. So yeah. I think that partially has to do it. But until there's a nomination, those pledges, since they were technically Biden delegates, don't necessarily mean anything until that roll call vote.
On that first vote.
That's what it does appear to be.
Yeah. All right, folks. 1-800-684-3110. If you've got calls and questions for us, we are taking your calls and questions. That's 1-800-684-3110 here on Seculo. And again, support the work of the ACLJ. We are out of time again. This is the final week of our Life and Liberty Drive, and we're behind. We're fighting our greatest challenge yet in our defense of Israel. What Biden and Harris, the radical left, are doing to Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu, is a disgrace. Donate.
Keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls, too. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So kind of recap, Will. We've got chaos at the Capitol ahead of Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech this afternoon, which we will cover for you. If there are relevant parts for you, we'll cover it on the show tomorrow, because that's this afternoon after we're off the air. Tulsi Gabbard joining us about who the real Kamala Harris is. And I think you're already seeing, Will, the Trump campaign try and define her as actually someone who has been bad for the black community and has been a prosecutor who has targeted black people.
That's right. And you have all this happening while the Prime Minister of Israel will be addressing a joint session of Congress today.
She's not attending.
That she is not attending. This is the most divisive issue in the Democrat Party right now. You're seeing thousands and thousands of protesters all across the U.S. Capitol today. You saw them being able to breach one of the House office buildings yesterday and get into the rotunda there and have a demonstration. And you're having sitting members of Congress, like Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, tweet out, "Netanyahu is a war criminal committing genocide against the Palestinian people. It is utterly disgraceful that leaders from both parties have invited him to address Congress. He should be arrested and sent to the ICC." Yeah. The ACLJ is fighting back on that, though, Jordan.
We are.
We had mentioned about a week or so ago on the show that we had requested permission from the ICC to file an amicus brief in their hearings that they'll be having on whether or not they have jurisdiction over Prime Minister Netanyahu, right, and the defense minister for these arrest warrants that the prosecutor is seeking. We just got word that we have been given permission to file that amicus brief. We have a short deadline on this, but this is us. We will be fighting back directly against the rogue International Criminal Court prosecutor that wants to have jurisdiction over non-member states and Israel and the America, everyone, as well as fighting against the radical language from Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who both are calling for these arrest warrants on Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Right.
We will be getting our arguments in. It's something rare, but something that the ACLJ has specific history with and experience in, fighting against the rogue prosecutions of the ICC that try to extend their jurisdiction over the United States and Israel.
Yeah, that's right. And we got the okay to file at the ICC, so we will be doing that. We will let you know as soon as that is filed, and we'll make sure it's up online at ACLJ.org. But that is the ACLJ right there, defending the right of Israel to exist, while our own vice president ignoring Israel to go and speak to a sorority group that she was part of. I think if you're vice president running for president, you figure out how to do both of those things. You could be in a couple places very quickly with the aircraft that they utilize and at the schedule that you're supposed to keep as not just vice president, but also as a major party candidate, which should keep you on the road almost every day of the week, and probably is a lot easier to do that when you're vice president than when you are president. When you're president, you've got to set aside campaign time each week, but you also still have to run the country. And I don't think anyone thought, Will, that Vice President Harris was running any part of this country. The best example, like Tulsi Gabbard said, is her being the immigration czar and yet never really going and meeting with the people that matter, nor proposing changes that would have gotten things under control.
That's right. The most effective tool that Vice President Harris had was when she gave a speech and just told migrants, do not come. That was it. Just a blanket statement. Don't come to the United States. There's too much chaos. But clearly, that was early on in the presidency. And we see now the unchecked chaos that has unfolded with her supposedly leading that effort to control the southern border And I think, once again, it's not going to be the personal attacks or the memes or the petty politics against Vice President Harris that will do any good to try and defeat her. If anything, that could make her more endearing. It's going to have to be her record.
Yep. And she's got one, because she was Vice President of the United States under President Biden. So the interesting part will be, does she try to ever distance herself from any Biden policies while she is still serving as the Vice President to President Biden? How long does that last? How long do you think Biden stays in office? 1-800-684-3. All right, folks, welcome back to Secula. I do want to take your phone calls on Harris. Now that she is kind of putting all the steps in play to be the vice presidential nominee, and look, they could start voting on that as early as August 1st. So I think by the time we get to the convention, Will, it doesn't look like we're going to have one of those convention battles. If someone doesn't rise up about right now and say, I can challenge Harris, here's why, and I can also raise the money to do it.
That's right. And as well as the fact that the DNC is saying they are still going to go forward with their virtual roll call to get the nominee in place early. So we should know next week, maybe by midweek, who the vice presidential candidate for the Democrats are. This is moving very fast. And the fact that almost every contender that would have been an opposition to Kamala Harris, maybe it'd be Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, J.B. Pritzker out of Illinois. All of these people have endorsed Kamala Harris. So kind of the heavyweights of their bench, if you will, the most well-known names have all endorsed her. So it would have to be an unknown entity, really, to the nation that's right. Not going to happen at this point. But also the Trump campaign actually filed a complaint with the Federal Election Commission on Tuesday, arguing that President Biden's war chest for the campaign can't just be taken over by Kamala Harris. So it's nearly $100 million of cash on hand that they have, that they're arguing that when you replace the principal of the campaign committee, then it changes everything. Right. So it's not saying, oh, this is the same campaign committee, the Biden Harris for president, that this now it's probably a Hail Mary. I'm not a legal expert on campaign finance laws, but it's worth filing at least to, if they were to say, okay, no, you can't have these funds, then $100 million has to be donated to super PACs, things like that.
But you lose control over.
They lose control over. It's not the hard dollars, as you've talked about on this broadcast before, that the campaign can direct and really use for their strategy. It'll be interesting to see what the Federal Election Commission, what their take on this is in this unprecedented time.
Yes, and it is unprecedented, folks. I mean, we're going to take your calls now, 1-800-684 3110. Let's go to Charlotte in Georgia on line one. Hey, Charlotte.
Hi, Jordan. Blessings to you guys and this wonderful work that you're doing. Kevin Whitfield, who I care for, has just joined the ACLJ with his monthly donations.
Great.
And in advance. And so we're with you in spirit, too, for everything you're going through.
Thank you. We appreciate that so much. And I think that, again, speaking on behalf of our fundraising, we have a matching moment right now through the Life and Liberty campaign. And that means whatever donation you make to the American Center for Law and Justice is effectively doubled. You have that throughout the entire month. You can go to aclj.org or aclj.org/life and liberty. So you go right to that homepage. And of course, anyone that wants to be a monthly contributor and thus a champion for the ACLJ, those have been growing as well. So either way you'd like to support the ACLJ financially, whether it's through a monthly donation that you set up, that you kind of set up on your own, set up the amount, and it does it automatically after that, or that you choose on your own which times you want to call in or go onto the website and donate to us at the American Center for Law and Justice. And I think, Will, too, you look at those moments, like with President Trump, after he was shot, I think it was $50 or $60 million into his campaign,
right,
and something similar to that again when he accepted the nomination the first night people heard him talk. So again, money is a huge part of this, because we're getting very late in this race, and really you need money for three things. You need money for your staff, so you have the best staff from your party in the country. You need money to put on ads about yourself. You need money to get ads out about Democrats. And Vice President Harris, it's not like she's been on the road a lot,
yeah,
doing a lot of tough press conferences, and now she's going to have to, at some point, She's going to have to announce a VP, and I think, unlike most conventions, she might have to announce them before people start voting, because that might change their view of Kamala Harris.
That's right. And as you've mentioned, to some degree, being the vice president is the better position if you're running for president, because if you do want to break from your president once they start asking you those issues, it's like, well, I am the vice president. I'm not the dictator of policy. I don't drive the ship in that sense, but I am there to support and to fulfill my constitutional duties in the line of succession. But when you see this moment where she was known a lot about because she was a public figure, whether being the attorney general of the state of California, which we actually had to fight against and file lawsuits about the way she was going after crisis pregnancy centers in the state of California, wanting them to have to basically advertise for abortion. And we have taken her on. We know her record. She does have a long record. Right. But now there's been like a 4-year almost quiet period where she hasn't had to be the person that the buck stops with. It doesn't fall on her fully if there is a failed policy administration in their administration. That's what is going to have to be decided by the RNC, the Trump campaign, and how they want to engage that, because that, as she starts to get back on the road, is what people will need to be reminded of, as she's been able to get out of the spotlight and just be kind of that meme vice president that people have the silly things she says, the weird catchphrases. But that's not what you're going to beat someone with.
Are we going to see her, you think, Will, out on the road? I mean, this is a sorority event today, but I mean, I would imagine we see her out on the road very soon, very officially, with her campaign events.
So she did have that rally in Wisconsin last night, which the number said roughly 2,000 to 3,000 people attended. There were reports from the press that this was the most energized the campaign has been since the beginning. Now, that obviously was her first stop. There was a lot of people there at this Wisconsin event that were probably excited just for the novelness of it. It'll be interesting to see what they do. Also, what kinds of events are planned in the wake of that failed assassination attempt on President Trump. If the Trump campaign is saying don't do outdoor events, is the same message going to be going for her as well? Yeah. Obviously, the sitting vice president has a robust Secret Service protection as it is, and there are a lot of precautions that go into that. But it will be interesting to see if for the entire campaign now in these final months, and we're not even to Labor Day yet. I mean, technically, she's not even the nominee yet. But when the American people start really paying attention is kind of after Labor Day in that September time. What happens? What looks different about this campaign with everything that has come before it already in this year?
Let's go to Fred in Tennessee on line three. Hey, Fred, you're on Seculo.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call. I was just wondering, I mean, I try to keep up fairly good with what's going on in the nation. And for the life of me, I can't think of anything that she's done other than, you know, she go take a tour somewhere in Texas. Away from the border, and I think she took a vacation in Florida. But other than that, I don't know of anything that she's done politically or any other ways. And if you could sort of expound on that, I'd appreciate it greatly.
Well, listen, she has been the czar when it comes to illegal immigration. She hasn't done hardly anything or anything at all on that issue. And again, when she speaks, Joe Biden makes a lot of gaffes. So does Kamala Harris, and she's a much younger person. But she has had very bad public events. And Will, I don't know if this changes her because she feels like, now I'm going to be the president, so I'm going to be maybe clearer, and I'm not trying to figure out where's Joe Biden's line all the time. But she was saying things always, even with a teleprompter, that like Trump said about Biden, that didn't make any sense. I mean, do you love yellow school buses? It's a clear question. But you're talking to a group of people who are, you know, 40 and 50 plus years old. That's not what they're thinking about right now. They're thinking about whether or not they can pay their bills and pay their mortgage, feed their family, and pay their bills.
Well, and some of the reporting you've seen coming out of places like Axios and some of the more in the weeds political publications is things like she has had very high turnover in her staff, which for a vice president is not super normal. So it is interesting that are these speeches that she gives, is it because she has a lot of turnover with a speechwriter? And so there's not enough time for the speechwriter to get a good rapport with the candidate or with the principal and to get really something that would make sense in their language and the way that they talk and the way that their persona is. But now you're going to see the spotlight more on her, as opposed to you see these man on the street videos from late night shows.
Yeah.
Most of the country, unfortunately, not most of the country, but a large portion of the country probably can't even name who the vice president is at any given time.
They don't usually vote for who the vice president
exactly.
is.
Exactly. So the fact that now the spotlight is on her, we that follow this and our listeners that follow politics and follow the government and who the administration is, have seen a lot more of those gaffe videos than the vast majority of the American public. So what's going to be interesting is how it shifts, how her tone shifts, even the way the speeches are written when she's in the spotlight.
I think you're going to see a lot of those gaffe videos, folks. I mean, you're going to see them from the Trump campaign. They've already had them ready to go. You're going to see them from other entities as well. People knew it was likely it could be Harris, so they were ready to go. Now, I want to tell you about what you need to be ready to do for the American Center for Law and Justice as we come to the end of our Life and Liberty Drive. We want to encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ financially. Double the impact. Your donation is doubled if you go online now to aclj.org/lifeandliberty, or if it's just easier to keep in your mind, the homepage, aclj.org. Donate today. Folks, we're going to take your calls. If you've got calls, get them in now. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Will, let's go to a call.
That's right. Let's go to Susan calling from Maryland on line 4. Susan, you're on Seculo.
Hey, Susan.
Yes, thank you. How would the black community follow Kamala when she voted for the death sentence for a black man in California, denying him DNA until somebody pressured her to do DNA and the black man was innocent? How would anyone address her negative visceral responses to the black men in her own community? They don't seem to have any, attitude towards her. And she has also voiced no advocacy for housing for the black community in comparison to like a Ben Carson. And then finally, the only abortion conference at a university she attended was at a primarily black university. How have they not called her out on the fact that she visited no other university speaking to abortion other than at a black university? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan. Listen, I mean, I think, again, you know that Kamala Harris is dedicated to the issue of abortion. There's no question about it, Will. She is someone who has also pledged, if she gets Democrats in Congress, to bring back Roe versus Wade as a congressional law.
That's right. And this is her entire record, back from when she was a prosecutor and then the attorney general of the state of California. There are cases we had to file in California which had her name in the caption. And then after she went on to become Senator Harris, the name was replaced with Becerra, who is the current HHS director. We have been fighting back against the outrageously extreme pro-abortion policies of the members of the Biden administration since way before they were in the Biden administration. And you can only believe that it will be more extreme trying to push for, whether it be a federalized Roe versus Wade style law, or whether it be the speaking tour that she went on trying to encourage states to pass more pro-abortion laws, or whether it be what you saw out of California while she was the attorney general, where they were forcing pregnancy resource centers, places that women could go to get help, to get resources while they're pregnant, that is not an abortion clinic. They were forcing them to display signs advertising where they could go get abortions. And the regulations told the font and the size of the sign. It was very detailed. We fought back against that and won. But those are the policies and legacies of Vice President Harris now wanting to be President Harris, is that she wants to silence speech and then force speech that you have to advertise something you're morally against if you're just trying to help women that are in a crisis pregnancy situation.
That's what she's all about, is forced, compelled speech. And that's why you've got to be in lockstep now with the Democrat Party. If you question some of their actions on late-term abortion or definition of abortion, you are not a member in good standing of the Democrat Party, which is why you've seen some leave the Democrat Party and also others decide not to run for office as well. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Billy in Maryland on line 5. Hey, Billy.
Hey, how are you?
We're good.
So Fox News last night had a professional woman that was talking about none of the Democrats have asked about the money that they've raised. Nobody's called, nobody's asked what it can be done, and he's saying that they can't do with the money what they're doing, but in typical Democrat fashion, they're spending their money like it's theirs, just like they do our tax money.
Yeah, I think that they would have already figured out how to utilize the resources before announcing that Harris would be the VP nominee backed by Joe Biden. So obviously they figured that back in out, because the key, Will, is if you've got that $200 plus and $300 million, it's very hard for anyone to challenge you, even if they're a better politician.
Right. Here's the big question I've seen actually a lot of places as well.
The Democrat Party becomes kind of null and void if she's able to continue to utilize that money directly.
And they clearly, that is what they believe. The Trump campaign, rather, has filed a challenge with the FEC. The one big question I've been seeing floated around, and I think the FEC is probably going to need to issue a statement on this. Right. There's a lot of people confused now. If I've given to the Biden-Harris campaign,
does that money just go to Harris? Help?
And or can I donate again now that she's at the top of the ticket? Say I maxed out my donation to Joe Biden.
I don't think you will, because I think that will be, if she keeps that money that came from you, that will be like her getting the check. But I do think, like, if you're right on the line right now and you're donating to Biden one last time, that's where you come into the issue, is the Biden team will meet a certain point where they've got to move this money over to Harris.
Right.
The rest of it will be dark money. It'll be 527 money. Until they do that, I don't think you can make it go above the amounts. I think that would get yourself into trouble. But we can get answers and judicial opinions on this once we're a little bit further down the road, especially if it's someone other than Harris. Harris has got that initial money. The question is, could she double that money with the same donors coming in and saying, well, it's just Harris now. I'd like to get her more resources because she has not had 4 years as president to define herself at a national level. Again, my idea was that they had to go with Harris. They were too worried about the black vote. They were too worried that there would be a black vote that just did not show up for them while Donald Trump is doing better, especially amongst black males. So all of those issues combined, folks, are reasons why we believe that, you know, Kamala Harris is extremely vulnerable. But don't put anything past these Democrats at all. Let me say that again. Don't put anything past these Democrats at all. It's early still. There was some strategy behind doing this announcement, not just Joe Biden announcing he would not seek re-election, but immediately pivoting to where he's going to get very little attention and Kamala Harris is going to get the attention of a president, because like you said, she's about wrapped up the delegates she needs to get the nomination.
As well as the fact that we talk about it a lot, because our work, the policies that we advocate for, the Constitution that we advocate for. However, the vast majority of America isn't paying attention to presidential politics right now. If they were a Republican voter, they may have voted in a primary and been paying attention to that early on. But because the Republican primary was over so quickly, that fortunately for a lot of America that doesn't want to be bombarded with it, it went away for a while. Yep. The American people don't really start paying attention to the general election until Labor Day. That's when the campaigns start piling the money. You see it everywhere. And that's when people are like, okay, it's presidential election time. We'll take a look. So a lot of people we think, oh man, it's so close to the election that they pulled Biden. For the vast majority of America, they're not even paying attention yet. It was a quick switcheroo for them. Now they have a new candidate, and they have plenty of time to put forward a full campaign.
We know what Biden, Harris, and the radical left are doing to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and that it's a disgrace. If they don't defend Israel, we will. And we need your support. We're preparing to file one of our most important amicus briefs ever at the International Criminal Court. The ICC just granted our motion and our deadline to file in just days. And we've mobilized our Jerusalem office and our offices across the globe to defend Israel and are sending a new demand letter to the UN next week. But we can't do this fight without you folks. We need you standing with us at the ACLJ, being part of our Life and Liberty Drive, and doubling the impact of your donation at ACLJ.org.